When Jesus on the Mount gave his keynote address announcing the arrival of his kingdom, one of the first conditions was to hunger and to thirst after righteousness. This is one of the principles of his kingdom, to be a part of it, to accept this principle that hunger is a good thing. Hunger is a blessing, if it is a hunger for the right thing. Jesus pronounced a blessing with a promise on those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. When we had our little health seminar back in April with Jim and Neva Brackett, I gave little talks each night, you may remember, about how to feel about food. And I think it was the last night I talked about the blessing of hunger. When I was about 14 or 15, after having read at least excerpts of Councils on Diets and Foods, I decided I would not eat in between meals anymore. And I found it much easier than I thought it would be. And the greatest blessing that has come from that is that two or three times a day, at least, I get to enjoy the feeling of being hungry with the promise of fulfillment. Now, hunger without that promise of fulfillment, to feel empty, to be starving, to be thirsting, and to feeling and to be feeling all the ill effects of those conditions without the promise of food or water, that is not a blessing. That is not a blessing. But to be hungry, knowing that you will soon be satisfied and fulfilled, that is a wonderful experience. The problem with us is, and I think Jesus recognized this as he continued in his keynote address, his Sermon on the Mount, that because of the appetites of Adam and Eve that we have inherited, our cravings, our hungers, our appetites are too often for that forbidden fruit instead of for those things that truly satisfy, for those things that tend to righteousness and wholeness and really make us healthy in every sense of the word. How many of you have ever been in line in the supermarket and peered into the shopping cart ahead of you to see what they had purchased? Has anybody else done that? You know, it's none of your business. It is really none of our business to do that. But we are interested in what other people are filling their shopping carts with. You know, sometimes it's just dismaying. And I have to confess that sometimes I find myself feeling a little smug about my better choices. And I know that's not right either. But often you can draw apparent parallels between the food that is being put into the shopping cart, if you can call it that, and sometimes you can, of course, and the general appearance of health or want thereof in the person who is shopping. There is a direct correlation between what we put into our bodies in terms of nutrition or lack thereof and our health, the degree of health we enjoy. The world in which we live is a vast mall full of shops and markets. And our minds and our hearts are the shopping carts. And we pass from aisle to aisle, and we see appealing displays of things that are good or not so good for us. And the question, and I think this question is presented to us at the table this morning, is what will we fill our shopping carts with? And now I'm not talking about physical food, that food which we can eat and still perish. But I'm talking about that spiritual food that satisfies and creates a deeper hunger for righteousness, a sharper thirst for the things of God. It is so easy for us to be drawn to be attracted by, to fill our carts with, to fill our minds and hearts with those things that are empty calories or those things that inflame or irritate or clog the system that make us unable to fully appreciate God's high calling for us. We have only so much room, even if you get the Costco size of shopping cart. There is not room for everything. There's not time for everything. What will we put into our minds and hearts? Melinda and I have both been following keenly the presidential election, and it seems to me that there are so many issues at stake that speak directly to what we understand to be the fulfillment of prophecy and the erosion of civil and religious liberties and the breakdown of the wall of separation between church and state. As the debate came on at 6, we watched for a few moments. And there was something in me that didn't want to turn it off, but I wanted to be ready for Sabbath, and so I did. And I said to Melinda later in the evening, because we had such a sweet evening together and reading, and I said, you know, what a blessing is the Sabbath. What a blessing, you know, to put the Sabbath and keeping it holy into our shopping cart. What a blessing to be able to just turn apart, turn aside from the world, and fill our minds with those things that create a longing in our hearts for Christ and His righteousness. For heaven. Isaiah was thinking about these things when he wrote in Isaiah 55, "Hello, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. And you who have no money, come buy and eat. All you need is your hunger." And I think if there's any point to which we need to pray, it is, Lord, please wean my mind and my heart from the things of the world that are taking my time and my interest away from you. Yes, come buy wine and milk without money and without price. Why do you spend money for that which is not bread, and your wages for that which does not satisfy? And we know, don't we, at the end of the day, that which the world offers does not satisfy. Listen carefully to me and eat what is good, and let your soul delight itself in abundance. And so Jesus said to the people in John chapter 6, he said, "Do not labor for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to everlasting life, those things that are eternal and of eternal value, which the Son of Man will give you." And then Jesus said, "I am the bread of life." It is so simple. It is so simple. It's as simple as this meal. Jesus is the bread of life. And just as we partake of these emblems in a very real way, so we may partake of His Word, of Him through His Word, and through meditation, and through the singing of hymns, and through our conversation with each other. "For my flesh," Jesus said, "is food indeed, and my blood is drink indeed. He who eats my flesh and drinks my blood abides in me, and I in him. As the living Father sent me, and I live because of the Father, so he who feeds on me shall live because of me. This is the bread which came down from heaven. Not as your fathers ate the manna and are dead. He who eats this bread will live forever." These things he said in the synagogue as he taught in Capernaum, at the church and banning, as through the Holy Spirit he spoke to the hearts there. I'd like to close with just a few thoughts from the Mount of Blessing. I'm going to just kind of bounce over the top of the waves here. "Not by painful struggles or wearisome toil, not by gift or sacrifice is righteousness obtained, but it is freely given to every soul who hungers and thirsts for it. No human agent can supply that which will satisfy the hunger and thirst of the soul. But Jesus says, 'Behold, I stand at the door and knock. I will come in. If any man hear my voice and open the door, I will come in to him and will sup with him and he with me, which we are about to do. If you have a sense of need in your soul, if you hunger and thirst after righteousness, this is an evidence that God has wrought upon your heart in order that he may be sought to do for you through the endowment of the Holy Spirit, which you cannot do for yourself. We need not seek to quench our thirst at shallow streams, for the great fountain is just above us, of whose abundant waters we may freely drink. And finally, the heart that has once tasted the love of Christ cries out continually for a deeper draught. And as you impart, you will receive in richer and more abundant measure every revelation of God to the soul. I love this thought. Every revelation of God to the soul increases the capacity to know and to love. The continual cry of the heart is, more of thee, and ever the Spirit's answer is, much more.